Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off. All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is two times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Hey, Mom.
Hey, sweet girl. I sound like we're just coming home. Like I just walked through the door. Like you just walked in.
Hey, Mom. What's for snack? I'm hungry.
After school snack.
After school. Mom, how do you feel?
I feel pretty good. I had a good night's sleep. I feel pretty rested.
Oh, no. Mom, I mean, how do you feel? Like, how?
Like, how do I go about feeling?
Yes. How do you feel? Because I don't know. Well, actually, I do know. But I only know because I'm sober and I had to figure that shit out. Yes. But I think a lot of people don't know. So today we're going to talk about how do you feel?
How to feel. How.
How. Also, how to feel makes it sound like we're going to tell you now.
Today you're going to feel happy. Tomorrow you're going to feel sad.
That was a section of programming where we feel restless. And then we move our legs because we have restless leg syndrome.
I feel jittery.
Yeah. And now we feel exhausted.
Right.
We've been wanting to record this episode for a while because something happens in sobriety. And that is all of the feelings, there are feelings, and all of the feelings that you didn't even know you were numbing or escaping or just blurring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Or what's not quite so strong as numbing? I don't know.
Well, ignoring, I guess. I guess ignoring, that's pretty strong.
Yeah.
All the feelings are there. And I've heard it said, like, the opposite of addiction is connection, right?
Yeah. Johann Hari said that.
Yeah. And I totally get that and I see it. But I think also the opposite of addiction is feeling your feelings. And actually, the opposite of addiction, I think, is feeling uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, Johann Hari said that the opposite of addiction is connection, but Gabor Mate said if there's one reason that addiction happens, it's because I don't want to feel what I feel.
And I think a lot of what we do to avoid, it's to avoid feeling discomfort.
Yes.
It's feeling uncomfortable.
When we're addicted or when we're using something, it's because we have a low tolerance for negative emotion.
Mm-hmm.
It is a superpower to be able to embrace negative emotion and not be afraid of it.
Yes. And I think many of us, if you started drinking at 14, 15, 16, 17, and also grew up in the 80s or 90s, you weren't taught how to feel.
No.
Like, we just aren't taught how to feel. And actually, I did a little research leading up to this episode and just Googling just stuff about feelings. And overall, what comes up when you Google, like, how to feel or something, it's always how to feel happy.
Oh, right. How to get rid of all that negative stuff.
Yeah.
We want toxic positivity.
Yeah. Like, tell me how to feel. And it's like, did you mean how to feel happy? It's like, no, Google. I meant how to feel. And Google's like, happy? Like, fuck you, Google. No.
But okay, so can I make a little shift here?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like the 80s when you were young and all that. We actually don't need to be taught how to feel because we do have feelings. We are emotional creatures. And so we need to take the restrictions off feeling, because feeling, that's the most natural thing in the world that makes us human. And so we've learned to restrict it, to ignore it. Like Homer Simpson says, you push in a little ball and you push it way down and don't pay any attention to it. That's what we were taught. Right.
Right. Well, we were taught feelings were bad.
Yes.
And that there just wasn't room. Right. It's like if it's a negative feeling, negative emotion, there's not room. And the problem with that is in sobriety, there are feelings. And for many of us, it's the first time we're really allowing ourselves to feel them. And that can feel really scary. It can feel out of control. It can feel like, oh, I'm on the wrong path. Like, if this is what this shit's about, like, I don't want it because this sucks, right?
Right.
So we thought we'd talk about how to feel. How do you feel? And before we dive in, what we always talk about is before we can get to what do we need, we have to be able to answer the question, how do we feel? Because if we don't know how we feel, we don't know what we need.
Yes. And we have probably been either numbing it or, you know, it seems like there are two ways that emotions we have troubles with. One is if we're ignoring it, pushing it down, trying to move past it, trying to be different, then that's not good or healthy. Then the other thing that happens with emotion often is we get overwhelmed with emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so both of those are too much. One is too much ignoring. One is too much being just sort of leveled by emotion. And so the goal is, we call it therapeutically, hold the emotion. I can be sit in this emotion. That's what a good therapist will do for you. She won't escalate the emotion. She won't discount the emotion. She will hold it. And that's what we do for ourselves in sobriety. We hold it. We say, ah, this is what I'm feeling. And it is absolutely okay to feel it. And I have to identify it, make friends with it, and then move to the next, like, okay, and now what do I need?
Mm-hmm. And what if, because as you're talking about overwhelm, I think, you know, looking back to when I stopped drinking. I mean, granted, we were in a pandemic and I had a baby and a toddler and a five-year-old and all of that. But even without that, I do think probably the primary emotion for a lot of women is overwhelmed and like flooded, right? That's what I feel like, flooded.
Yes.
When I'm flooded and I'm literally like shaking my head and like closing my eyes, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I know what I do when I'm flooded, and now my family knows it too. And then my husband could say, oh,
back off.
Look at her. Let's give mommy some
back off.
Yeah. She's going to blow. So let's give her some space, because it is like there's so much in your head. And so what I have found when it's just overwhelm, when I can't even get to what's underneath, right? When the primary feeling is overwhelm, I generally have to get out of my head.
Yes.
Like that for me is key. And we talk about this a lot in the groups in the cafe, is like our heads can really screw up everything.
Yeah.
Especially feelings, right?
Yeah.
Because we don't feel in our heads. We think in our heads, and our thoughts can really screw up our feelings.
Yes. That makes me think of when I was in therapy, my therapist was Dean. As you well know, I used to always talk about, well, Dean says.
Yeah. And I'm like, ugh, who cares what Dean says?
Dean always distinguished between how you're thinking and how you're feeling. So if he'd say, how do you feel? And I say, confused. He'd say, no, confused is not a feeling. Confused is what's going on in your head.
Yeah.
Bring it down to your chest, to your heart. That is where we can figure it out. But that, like, well, I don't know, I'm thinking this and I'm thinking that and I'm analyzing this and I'm confused. And no, that's not a feeling.
Yeah.
No. And so that overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
And when we feel it in our body, that is a signal to slow down. And as you said, that's when you need to, you close your eyes and shake your head and everybody leaves you alone. That is exactly the remedy, right?
Yeah.
Really slow it down. Feel it, get clear on, you know, we often talk about we're not math equations, as I often say. So it might not just be one feeling. There might be four feelings. But unless we slow down and get sort of in our chest about it, we can't figure that out.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's been a long process to say like, oh, okay, now they know when I close my eyes and shake my head, they know what that means, right? That did not happen right away. And I don't know if they know what that means, but my husband knows. He picks up on it very quickly, because I do feel it. I start to, you know, my pulse elevates. I get hot and it's all here, you know, and even the instinct is just to curl up in a ball. You know, like when my older brother, he used to like chase me, and it was fun, you know, chase me around the house as little kids do. And I would get just so flooded with like, oh my God, you know, he's 2.5 years older than me and I'm little, and my little legs just are going as fast as they can, but they're no match for him. And I'm just going, and he's going to catch me. And the panic, the terror, the fear, I would get so overwhelmed that I would just drop to the floor and curl up in a ball. And then he would trip over me every time, because I just couldn't, like, I could no longer function. And then I just, you know, the feelings just overtook me. And it's so funny, because now Gray does that. And I see him doing that. And I'm like, yeah, buddy, I see you. And I know what's going on when it's just too much. I know for me always, I think the answer when I'm overwhelmed and I don't know what's going on is either movement. So a run can kind of help me even just sort out my feelings, because I really do get out of my head, more into my body, and that, you know, that cadence, and I don't really have to think about what I'm doing. And then my thoughts can kind of form into figuring out, oh, okay, I'm feeling anxious because I have a big interview coming up that I don't feel prepared for. Oh, great. So what do I need? Oh, I need time away from the kids and I need to tell my husband that I need 30 minutes that I can prep for this so I feel prepared, right?
Yes.
That requires me to get out of my head and into my body so then I can return to my head to kind of figure it out. So for me, it's either movement, nature, so just getting outside, going for a walk, taking Georgia, just whatever, or water, like in the shower, that happens too, where I'm just in my body more and I like very hot showers, or music, just like dancing.
Yeah. And all of those things are really, as you said, you're getting into your body. And, you know, it's the Bessel van der Kolk who does all this stuff with trauma. The body keeps the score. And it is just getting out of our heads and getting into the center of ourselves. And, you know, another thing that I think is really important, because this confusion and overwhelm, confusion is how we're thinking, but the overwhelm is how we're feeling. I think it's really helpful if we reduce the number of words we use for feelings, because, you know, there are 700 words for feelings, and that increases the sort of confusion, I think.
Totally.
Yeah. So if we just use like mad, sad, glad, afraid, ashamed, hurt, and if we just use those, of course, there are many different words to describe all of those.
Yeah, but you don't have to figure that out right now.
Right, right. But if you are going to try all those other sort of gradients of things, but if I'm saying I'm mad, then I know what that means. I'm pissed, I'm angry, I'm irritated, I'm disappointed, whatever. But trying to streamline the way we speak about it, even to ourselves, I think that helps us identify. And what we're trying to do is identify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and feeling pressured to say, like, right off the bat, okay, so I'm feeling something and I'm feeling angry, but am I feeling, is it anger or is it more, you know, and it's like, no.
Yes.
That's like PhD level stuff. And when we're in early sobriety, I mean, 4 years in, I'm not like, I can't pinpoint exactly. And like you said, it's a lot of times it's four or five of them and I'm angry and sad. And so, yeah, I think that it can overcomplicate it when we try to get so specific.
Yes, exactly. And overcomplicating is what we don't need.
Yeah, that's like the opposite of what we need.
Yeah, that's the opposite, yes. And the idea of, we've talked about this in the anger episode, if we are angry, if our feeling is mad, we do need to dig under that, because I promise 100% of the time there will be a vulnerable feeling under that powerful feeling of being mad. And very often it's fear, but it can be hurt and sad as well, or feeling ashamed. Yeah, ashamed is a big one when we're mad, because then we're defensive and all of that. But mad is not the end of the story. Mad is just the beginning of trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
Refer to whatever episode that was, 87 or something. I think Audrey. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, she was like, I said 93.
Yeah.
We'll link that in the show notes for sure, the anger episode. And I think we can't talk about feelings in sobriety without talking about feeling shame, because that is such a specific, and what I often say in the meetings, for me, was the most corrosive feeling. I think it was the one that I was terrified to feel and really assumed that I wasn't. You know, it seems so crazy now to say that I thought it would take me down. Because a feeling's not going to take you down.
No.
I promise you. A feeling is not going to take you down. But if there was a feeling that was going to take me down, it was shame, right? And I'm here to tell you that even the most corrosive one, shame, did not take me down. And I felt it. And as I say, I made eye contact with it. And I said, okay, not only am I going to welcome you in, but I'm going to like open arms. Like I'm going to be like the best host to you that I can, so that I could feel this shit, the mold in the basement. Let's get it out. Let's look at it. Let's feel it. Okay, I'm getting ready. Let's go. Feel it. Okay, great. And what does that look like? How do you feel shame? I mean, for me, it started by telling all of the stories, right? And saying the stories out loud of the things that brought the most shame to me. Like the stories that I've told on here 100 times of nursing gray in a blackout. And those stories that I thought that that feeling would capsize me. And it didn't. I mean, there were a lot of tears. There was a lot of anger. There's a lot of, I don't know.
Well, I think one of the things that's so important in this whole discussion is not thinking of emotions as our enemy. And that even shame, which we know shame is a lie, but we feel it and we want to switch it over to guilt because that is more of a healthy feeling. But emotions are not our enemy.
Mm-mm.
And I remember talking to you about something. This was maybe a couple of years ago, or I don't know. Time goes fast. I don't know when it was. But I was talking to you about something and I said, well, I try not to feel. And you were like, what are you trying not to feel for? I was like, okay, wait a minute. Who's the mom and who's the therapist here?
Yeah, wait a second.
But that's exactly, that was my MO. Basically trying to ignore myself. Because if I could ignore myself, then I could be appealing or I could be satisfying, or what's the word? I could be...
please everyone else or...
yes, right, right. Instead of just being authentic and being myself and saying, I don't like this or I need this or whatever. But so the idea that our emotions are messengers, they are not the enemy. And if we take the time to figure it out... and then do the next step, but not being afraid of this idea that it's an enemy. Emotion is not an enemy. It's a messenger.
It's not an enemy. And it's a lifeline, right?
Yeah.
It's a lifeline. And the question I always ask that I come back to in sobriety is, what is the cost, right? So what is the cost? What is the cost of a society of women who have been taught not to look at their relationship with alcohol? What's the cost, right? What is the cost of moms not knowing how they feel, therefore not knowing what they need? And what is the cost of us numbing our feelings? The cost isn't that the feelings just evaporate, right? And like, oh, good, nothing to see here. We're all good. We're robots.
Stepford wives.
Right, exactly. It's like you have feelings, you have needs, and that is not only okay, that's essential. And I think as moms, you know, we're more comfortable putting those to the side. But then that's when you ask, what's the cost? And the cost is not only being able to teach your children how to feel, and that it's okay to feel, and how to determine what they need. But the cost is your relationship with yourself and not feeling and not figuring out what you need does not lead to a life that's easier. It leads to one of bitterness and resentment and sickness. Like, I mean, just all of that stuff, it goes somewhere.
I've often heard it said that anger that's turned inward becomes depression, right? So when I'm pissed at someone, and if I'm too afraid to speak it or to address it, then if I just turn that inward, then yeah, then I get depressed because I'm not taking care of what really needs to be taken care of and not being able to speak my truth, be authentic.
Right. And then we don't get what we need.
Right. That's right.
You know, this goes into the people-pleasing thing of it too, is like a lot of us were, Mom, you were raised to be a people pleaser.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And like a good little girl and like do what you're supposed to do, get straight A's, do all the perfectionist stuff and like make everybody around you happy. And then you don't know how you feel or what you need because you are prioritizing everyone else above that.
Yes. And boy, if there's a thread through that I hear with a lot of women in our groups, it is definitely this. I was a people pleaser and I was a perfectionist. And then that always feeling like we're not enough, but also there's that resentment and sort of a seething underneath the surface anger that I'm discounted
Right, because you know what that resentment is, right? Like, that's the fire in you that's like not going to be ignored. That's like the fire, that's your soul saying like, hey, guess what? No. Yeah, like, I matter. I'm here. And I will be heard. And that's the work in sobriety, a lot of it, is figuring out that language of like, oh, okay, I see you now. Okay, yes, I'm in there. And now I need to figure out, I need to forget everything else I've been taught. And I need to come back home and say, okay, let's figure out what this is telling me. It can take some time and it can feel scary in sobriety when you're used to not feeling and you don't even know that you were numbing shit. You were just thinking, I'm not numbing anything. I'm just having two glasses of wine while I watch The Bachelor. Like, lay off, right. You know?
Right.
And it's like, well, no, you actually are.
Yes. And I think that if we bring it back to why we drank and what it did, so if we felt, without maybe even fully recognizing, but we felt something, we felt, you know, overwhelmed or we felt anxious or whatever it was, and then we're sort of in that moderation hell, so we're trying not to drink too much or not to drink at all maybe. So then we're feeling anxious, we're feeling like we've had a rough day, and then we drink. And now I feel bad about that I drank. And so it's the way that I cope with how I've, the negative emotion is to overeat or drink or whatever it is. That's that spiral that just keeps us in there. So the remedy, the really elegant remedy, is to feel all of it. That's the gold. That's where the juice is, as Audrey likes it when I say, because that is where all of the healing comes from, is being able to just feel it.
Yes, it's so true. And it's so true. Anytime, you know, and I get messages on Instagram a lot, and it's like, well, what about when I'm, you know, do you have any advice how to deal with this? And I've been drinking to deal with this, and what else would I do? And it feels like my answer is always a cop out, but it's not. I'm always going to say, yeah, you turn around and you look at it and you make eye contact with it.
I love that phrase that you came up with. I just love that. Yeah, make eye contact with it.
Yeah, and you say, come on in. Like, yeah, come in. And a lot of times that means like closing my closet door and crying. And that's great. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
If you are listening to this and you haven't cried since January, I don't know, like, go do it. Pause this. Pause it. Go put on like the saddest song. You know the one, right? You know the one that always gets you, right? You hear it in the grocery store and you're like, oh, no, I got to hurry up and get out of here. I don't want to hear this song. That's the one. You're going to put that on. You're going to close the door. You're going to go in a closet. You're going to go in your pantry. You're going to go in your car. There's something about the car. Start driving if you can or not. Just park it in your driveway and turn it up. And fucking cry.
Yeah.
Like ugly, beautiful cry. Because it's the best. And then you'll be able to maybe formulate a little bit more of like, oh, okay. Like then you're one step closer to figuring out what you need and everything that we talk about.
Right. And I say this so many times, people are probably roll their eyes, but that book by Susan Cain is all about this bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
It is about the richness of life when we allow for all the sadness, all the grief, all of it. Because, you know, we all sunshine makes a desert, right? Like, we just don't want to be happy all the time.
No one is. And those people creep me out.
No, and it's not real. It's not real.
No, it's not real. You know the person, like, that's always happy?
Yeah.
Ugh. I'm like, ooh, like somebody look in their basement because they are hiding bodies or something. Like, I do not trust them. I do not want them in my life.
Give me a morose person, please.
I mean, I am a Gen X emo girl through and through because like if you're just happy all the time, I don't even want to talk to you ever. Like even in car line and school pickup, like no one is that happy and you are hiding literal skeletons.
Knives in the
yeah, somebody check on everybody.
You know, another thing that all this discussion makes me think too, because we're talking to people who are sober curious, early in sobriety, maybe a few years in sobriety, but thinking of this whole thing as being our life's work, I think that puts less pressure on it too, that we have to perform, because we don't want this to be one more demand and performance.
Yes.
This is our life's work, to get really conversant with how we feel and all of it, and what should we do about it? What should we ask for? All of it. But, you know, this isn't something we have to accomplish in the first 6 months.
No.
Or the first 6 years. It's just our life's work.
It is. It is our life's work. And we're paving the way for our kids to be able to maybe just get there a little bit sooner than we are, right?
Yes, right.
They're not going to be there right away either. But it's amazing what happens when you have a mom like my mom, who feels the feelings and then says what she needs. Now, Mom, I'm teaching you that. But it is amazing, you know, seeing my kids doing this, because they're just parroting kind of what they hear me say, that they probably hear me say 5 times a day, I am feeling so frustrated, I need 5 minutes, you know? So then my middle will be like, I am feeling so frustrated, I need to go to my room. And I'm like, oh my God, that's great. I am so proud of you. Like, that's amazing.
That is amazing.
Also, I know we live in a society that has not drawn the line between alcohol and not feeling our feelings. Okay. So this makes it even harder, because this isn't like a commonly known thing that if you drink alcohol, you're not going to feel your feelings. Instead, we're being told when you drink alcohol, you will feel who you truly are. And that's just a lie. I mean, it's just scientifically not true. So I have this Healthline article. This is from February 5th, 2024. What is emotional numbness? And it's saying, you know, signs and symptoms, and what does it feel like? What does emotional numbness feel like?
Let's see, nothing.
And then it ends there. What causes emotional numbness? Stress and stress hormones, PTSD, medication side effects, depersonalization, derealization disorder, and fatigue. Not one mention of alcohol. Not one mention of alcohol. How to treat it? Get an appointment with a mental health professional, yes. Rely on your support systems. Exercise, sleep well, yes. Not one mention of cutting alcohol out.
Wow.
Which is
insane.
Insane.
Yeah.
Insane. I mean, I was like, oh, this is great. Surely. I was silly in assuming that surely they would make the connection between a nightly glass of wine or two or three, or binge drinking, or whatever it is, however much alcohol you have, and emotional numbness, but apparently not. And so that's an extra hurdle, right? That's an extra hurdle in sobriety when we're saying like, oh, wait, I didn't know that sobriety meant that I'm going to feel all my feelings, because I didn't know that alcohol was numbing them.
Yes. Yes. Right. And, you know, it goes back to that feeling that we're sort of on the cusp of something, where we are, you know, the badass women that are shifting the dynamic, shifting the paradigm, that we are, you know, turning lights on in the corners and being able to say, hold on, let's look, there's more here than just, yeah, those mental health things that make us not feel, or that make us feel numb.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, when we were going to talk about emotion, I was thinking about our retreat and the way that Jack, do you remember when she was talking about meditation, she was talking about identifying our feelings, and she had a great acronym, and I thought it'd be worth just running through that again and giving Jack full credit on this. RAIN is the acronym, and the first step is to recognize. And of course, that's what we're talking about, is we do need to take a minute, right? We need to slow down. We need to give ourselves some space. We maybe need to get away from everybody. However we need to do it, we need to pay attention or recognize what it is that we're feeling.
In just those like five words, not the overcomplicated one, just the high level.
Right, not 72.
Yeah.
Right, mad, sad, glad, afraid, ashamed, hurt.
Yes.
Pick one. Pick one or pick several. But yes, so recognize what you're feeling. And then the A is allow. So that's that making friends with it. Feel it. Sit in it. Hold it. Let it be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the I is investigate. And that's where we say, yeah, okay, what do I need? What is this about? What's making me feel this way? How is this entering into my life? What's around that's going on that's informing that emotion for me?
And maybe then that's when you get out the feelings wheel and you say, okay, it is mad, but can we get a little bit deeper on what is it, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we don't do all these steps like, okay, one, two, three, four. Okay, now I got it. You know, again,
right.
It's like, these are processes and we are not math equations.
Right. One A, I am feeling, I am going to, what's the first one? I already forgot.
Recognize.
One A, yeah. As I'm squinting my eyes and shaking my head and I'm like, one A, recognize. I recognize I am feeling overwhelmed. One B, allow. I'm allowing.
Yeah, that's hilarious. It's not B, it's A.
Oh, yeah. I made it even more complicated.
Right. And then so I is investigate and then N is nurture. So again, just being, you know, have compassion for all of it and for ourselves and for all of the ways that emotions enter into our lives. And yeah, so I love that. And thanks, Jack, for that, because it was great. Recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture.
Yes, I love that too. And this idea that a negative emotion is not this flashing red light.
Yeah. It could be a flashing red light, but it's not an enemy.
It's also, it doesn't have to be a flashing red light. Like, it's not like everything has to change. I have to shut this down. I don't want to feel it. It's a flashing red light.
Oh, right.
All systems. It's not that.
No.
It's not. It's normal.
Yeah.
We have become accustomed and brainwashed into believing that it's not a biologically normal thing to feel negative emotions.
Right.
It is. It's a guide, right?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Don't trust the person who feels happy all the time.
Right. I can think of one person I know, and I just don't like even being around her.
Same.
Well, what I was going to say is emotions are what separate us from the snakes, you know, like, and the spiders and the mouses.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, I was going to say all animals, but dogs have an emotional intelligence.
Oh, totally.
Dogs are very emotionally attuned.
That's why you need to get a dog, Mom.
I know. I'll just come and visit yours.
I know, but you need to get one. And just remember, there is motion in the word.
Right.
And it will pass. It will pass. I shared this tip that I don't say, like, I am sad. I say I'm feeling sad. That's how I talk about my emotions. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling guilty. I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling you.
We do allow that.
No happiness.
No,
none.
No.
If you ever feel happy, I don't trust you.
Ever.
Ever. I am kidding, you guys. Yeah, I'm feeling these things because I am not those things. I am not my emotions. I am not sad.
I like that.
I am not overwhelmed. I am not happy. You know, that I think helps. There's some distance there because your emotions are not who you are. You are so much more than that.
Yeah, we don't want to be identified by, you know, yeah, you're a mad person, an afraid person.
Yeah, I am angry. It's like, no, right now you feel angry. You won't, right? You won't.
Yes, yeah.
As long as you allow yourself to feel it, then you won't. And then until you will again, and then you allow yourself to feel it, then you won't again. And then You will.
You could just keep going on.
I love that.
Yeah, so basically, we're not helping you out here at all.
Yeah. So basically, good luck to you. Yeah. That's how Mom ends every one of her sessions. It's so odd.
Well, good luck to you.
She says, okay, well, our time is up. Good luck to you. You're going to need it out there.
That's not true, by the way.
Oh, she doesn't have very many repeat clients.
One and done, you know?
Yeah, good luck to you. Oof. And then with a little eye roll as they walk out, like, oof. That was, oof. Wow. Or wow. Do you ever say that? When they say something, do you ever say, wow, wow?
Well, actually, you know, sometimes as a therapist, if you have a real reaction to something that they're experiencing, I think it is helpful to go, oh, my God. You know, I don't know that I would say, oh, wow.
Do you say like, oh, my God, how could you do that? What kind of person are you?
What gives you the right?
No.
Like, but yeah, the idea that, oh, my God, you've been through so much. Oh, wow. You've been through so much.
No, I meant like when they did something and you're like,
oh, geez, holy moly, how'd you ever do that?
No, Mom, you would say, yikes. Yikes. Oh, my God. Well, Mom, we're coming back for an ask the therapist. That's what you're coming back.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were going to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that. Ask the therapist. If you have any questions for the therapist, leave them in a 5-star review. Let's do that.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, so I'm going to set that up again. Okay, so Mom's going to come back for an Ask the Therapist episode, and we're going to get the questions from your 5-star reviews. So if you rate and review it, leave a 5-star review with a question for the therapist, we'll ask Mom. She'll answer, and she'll fix your life right up.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And remember, this is not therapy.
Oh, yeah. Disclaimer. And then this is where the guy comes on. Disclaimer. This is not therapy. Oh, Mom, thank you.
Oh, thank you, sweet girl.
Thank you for telling me. How do you feel?
Yeah, now I just feel happy.
Oh, no. I don't trust you at all.
Oh, okay. No.
Love you.
Okay, honey. Love you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
It's easy to blame ourselves for our struggles with alcohol. We see people around us being able to control their drinking without any consequences, yet no matter what we try, we can't seem to figure it out for ourselves. My name is Jillian Teets, and I am the host of the Sober Powered Podcast, where I use my biochemistry background to explain the latest research in addiction and help you understand both why you drink the way you do and how to develop the skills and mindset you need to find freedom from alcohol. I discuss topics like why we think about our drinking 24/7, why we have no off switch, and why we crave alcohol. If you're struggling with your drinking or you know someone who is, then I hope that you will check out the Sober Powered Podcast. New episodes every Friday. See you there.